sound.
Ladies and gentlemen, before the proceedings begin, please enjoy some music from the new Bluegrass Disciples, featuring one of our employees, Jeff Kaplan.
And just so you know, every song we play, you can find on the archive, in the live music archive, by one band or another. So that's our MO tonight. All right, let's go.
Be worried long. I went across the river, I lay down to sleep. I went across the river, I lay down to sleep. I went across the river, I lay down to sleep. When I woke up with the shackles on my feet, it takes worried man to say where it's on. It takes worried man to say where it's on. It takes worried man to say where it's on. I'm worried now. There's 21 links of chain around my leg. There's 21 links of chain around my leg. There's 21 links of chain around my leg. And on each link, the initials of my name. It takes worried man to say where it's on. It takes worried man to say where it's on. It takes worried man to say where it's on. I'm worried now, it won't be worried long. Takes worried man to say where it's on. Takes worried man to say where it's on. I'm worried now, won't be worried long. And if anyone should ask you who composed this song, anyone should ask you who composed the song. If anyone should ask you who composed this song, to you and me, and I'll sing it all day long. It takes worried man to say a worried song. It takes worried man to say a worried song. It takes worried man to say a worried song. I'm worried now, won't be worried long. I'm worried now, won't be worried long.
Be my motto so high till my sobriety let
drop in my ticket. Loving that sweet girl, she means more to me than the whole wide world. Well, I used to be a killer with the ladies, me oh my. Find a man, forget them, but now I have my
woman. Love 'em and leave 'em, kiss 'em and grieve 'em. That used to be my motto, so high till my sophrony left me so lonely. Now there's teardrop in my heart, I'll take one. Love 'em and leave 'em, kiss 'em and grieve 'em. That used to be my motto, so high till my sophrony left me so lonely. Now there's teardrop in my eye.
Just in case you don't all know, what you're watching here is vintage footage courtesy of Rick Prelinger, the Prelinger Archive, and there's a ton of stuff on the archive from him. He's got great stuff, and man, does that look good. I think this was done on our new scanner, which if you haven't seen it downstairs, you should.
If you're downstairs right now, you're not listening to a radio program, you're listening to what's going on upstairs. So please, finish what you're eating, finish what you're drinking, and come on up for the show.
Here we go.
like summertime with Nick walking around. Strolling through the meadow is a pleasure there to down. Just give me the winter time when the snow's on the ground. And I found her when the snow's on the ground. I traced little footprints in the snow. I found little footprints in the snow. Got past that happy day when I lost the way. Found her when the snow was on the ground. She just stepped out, would be returning soon. Traced her little footprints and I found them in the snow. I found her when the snow was on the ground. I traced little footprints in the snow. I found little footprints in the snow. Oh, God bless that happy day when I lost her way. I found her when the snow. Up in heaven, she's with the angel band. I know I'm gonna see her in that happy land. Traced her little footprints and I found them in the snow. Found her when the snow was on the ground. I traced little footprints in the snow. I found little footprints in the snow. Oh, God bless that happy day when Nellie lost her way. I found her when the snow was on the ground. Yeah, I found her when the snow was on the ground.
You are listening to the new Bluegrass Disciples playing live at the Internet Archive Great Room. If you're downstairs, don't hesitate. Come on up, come on up. We're going to have a little show for you. We're going to talk about some great things we've been up to. So finish your food, finish your drink. Come on up.
Just got a chin up here.
Tune in the banjo. That's a joke right there. Don't need a person.
I guess I should.
That's good.
Too.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, here we go.
Set?
Yeah.
Looking up towards the sky, reminds me of my mama and my papa, who lived there 80 years before they died. There's a bright moon shining in the valley, and a wagon leans against the deck of hay. Two graves on the hillside by the cabin, my mom and dad are resting there today. Snow around the redwood trees, the branches of the laurel by the creek, the rippling waters of the gentle stream. Now there's a bright moon shining in the valley. That old wagon leans gets a stack of hay. Two graves on the hillside by the cabin. About the young days when he and mom first settled there, he spoke about the love of the mountains when he and Mama first were sitting there. Now there's a bright moon shining in the valley. That old wagon leans against the stack of hay. Two graves on the hillside by the cabin. My mom and dad are resting there today. I'll take one. Graves on the hillside by the cabin. My mom and dad are resting there today. Will my mom and dad are resting there today?
We got one more and then the real show is going to start, okay? Anybody do?
Ain't nobody gonna mock me too long. Won't you write these words on my headstone? Ain't nobody gonna miss me when I'm gone. Miss me when I'm gone. There ain't nobody gonna mock me too long. Won't you write these words on my headstone? There ain't nobody gonna miss me when I'm gone.
Well, you've been faithful, kind, and true to me, old copper. You're the only one that's never done me wrong. I'm weeping while I pat your head, old copper. For there ain't nobody gonna miss me when I'm gone.
There ain't nobody gonna miss me when I'm gone. There ain't nobody gonna mock me too long. Won't you write these words on my headstone? There ain't nobody gonna miss me when I'm gone.
All right, thank you. We're the New Bluegrass Disciples, and now the main show begins. Thank you so much.
I don't think that was enough applause, actually. That was the New Bluegrass Disciples. Headed over by our own wonderful Jeff Kaplan. They are a local band. They play well. So, we're still waiting for a few people downstairs, a few stragglers to make themselves known, but I thought I'd say hello to all of you. Hi there. I'm the kind of thing that the Internet Archive hires. My name's Jason Scott. I am a software curator, radical archivist, general troublemaker in the world of, you know, Internet archiving. And I'm here on this very special night that we're celebrating. Okay. I'm the MC for the evening, so you'll see me come in and out a little bit today, but this, what we're announcing tonight and what we're doing tonight, it barely needs an MC, to be honest. We're building the library of the future here. We need your help with that. We want you involved in it. We want everybody here to play a part in it. I hope you've all been checking out the stations we worked so hard on. Been showing you how we digitize films, how we scan books, how we play old video games, how we do stuff. We do stuff here. And just to remind you all, I'm sure you've all been given cards, library cards. Remember, if you stop by each of the stations and get a little star on your card, you'll be entitled to a prize at the end of the night. And not to be a spoiler, but this isn't the end. This event isn't, you know, this show we're about to do for you is not the end. There's still going to be dessert and stuff afterwards, and there's still going to be ways to check out all the amazing things we've been laying out for you. So don't worry, the night's not over for you, but it's going to be a pretty good night. So, how are we doing for downstairs? We got people still straggling downstairs, still stunned at the size of that newspaper scanner, the scariest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, that thing that scans the album covers. Oh, if I had had that as a child, I'd be a pretty geeky child, wouldn't I? Ugh. Anyway, we're going to have a couple people come up and talk about some of the things that we've been working on, the projects that we've been working on over the last year, and I want to thank you all personally, because you could have been home watching a baseball game. And no word against the baseball game, but we've been working harder here, so I appreciate you taking care of that. Anyway, so my title is Free Range Archivist, by the way. That means that I just kind of roam the countryside looking for things to absorb. So I call that out to you if you're anybody who's like, I've got a bunch of stuff. It should go here. I'm your person to talk to. I'll try to get you in touch with the right person. And how many people have been in this room before, by the way? All right, and how many people, this is your first time in this room. It's called the Great Room for a reason, isn't it? It's amazing. This was an old Christian Science church that was in disrepair, and Brewster saw it, liked it, reminded him of his logo, and here we are. Behind you are 6 petabytes of data going out to the internet as we speak. That is all of our server power. We've got extra servers elsewhere in the building, and every time that thing blinks, that's somebody enjoying something, I hope. At least they're now aware of it where they weren't before. Anyway, so do we begin? Do we begin? Okay. Oh no, you all want to begin, but I got a director lady. She tells me what to do. Okay, all right. Yeah, we all know this. In fact, I'm calling her out. Wendy has helped plan this event to a great degree. Just want to, you know, the sound of whip cracking has been all through the halls in the last couple of months, and it's, you know, here we are. So, this is why I'm wearing the jacket. You can't see it. Anyway, okay, so, you know, okay, so, this began as one man's dream, to build a library of Alexandria in the 21st century, to come up with a way of being a library in the internet age, to save that which may have been lost, and to just basically change the world. And I think he's doing a pretty good job where he's going. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, I'm talking about my boss, Brewster Kahle. Let's bring him out. Hey, Brewster, you around? You in the house?
Welcome to the open world, and welcome to the Internet Archive. This is completely fantastic. Oh, and are you enjoying those seat cushions that are the .com t-shirts that are making the pews a little bit more comfortable? Well, we asked last year for donations of .com t-shirts, and boy, did you guys come through. So hopefully you're enjoying it. But welcome to the Internet Archive. This is actually a big deal for us. We've only once in our past made a change in direction. And this is one of those nights we're announcing a change in direction for the Internet Archive. And it involves you guys. So this is going to be a participatory year coming up if we can do this successfully. The whole idea of what we're doing is we're going to build libraries together. That's our new theme. And it's a big difference. When we started this place in 1996, the idea was to just build an archive of the internet, people were going and putting their souls into going and pouring what it is they knew into the World Wide Web and other services. And the idea was to go and build an archive of it so that you could go and do data mining and searching and da 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 da. And actually, we've done a pretty good job of that, I would say. So just the web collection, I'm told by those that know how to count so high, we now have 430 billion web pages at ROC. It's growing at about a billion pages a week. So it's already, you know, it's starting to get big out there. It's, I don't know, 9 petabytes of data. And if you crane your necks and look at these machines that are in the back, those are 5 petabytes out of our 19 petabytes. And one thing that I find really cool is the lights on them blinking mean that somebody's either uploading something or downloading something from the Internet Archive. So it's getting about 2 to 3 million people a day coming and using not just the web collections, but the whole collections. And it puts us around the 200th most popular website in the world, which I think is pretty darn cool. So it turns out people want old stuff. Which is a good sign. So we got good at collecting the World Wide Web and going and making this thing available again. And then we found, well, there's a lot of things that weren't on the internet yet. So we sort of swiveled around 2002 and we became an archive on the internet. So the idea was to go and work with others that had collected amazing things or expertise in these different subject areas and basically went and made copies that were permanently available. Or we worked with people like Rick Preilinger or libraries around the world that had movies or books and started to make them available and digitize them cost effectively to bring them to the screen generation to make it so that these materials would be able to be used by people. So we're an archive on the internet. So we got better at doing movies and music, television, so recording television from around the world, which is starting in the year 2000, and now we've been making that more and more available. And then getting really good at books, at book scanning. But what the idea is to go and get archive onto the internet. But fundamentally, these were collections that were built by other people in other ways. And what we found more and more, some of the demands that we've been having from users and all sorts of stuff, is what they really want to do is have a presence, a permanent presence on the internet, one that they can trust that'll try to be there for a long time and not just kind of get sold out and say, oops, sorry, we're going to turn you off. The idea of a permanent presence that reflects their community. And their communities are not just, there's a whole social systems that have evolved around these websites to go in, who gets to put things up, how do they work, what's the quality metrics, and so they want a place to go, these content-based communities and institutions, a place to go and put things. And users want to be able to know where things come from, but they also want to be able to search above and beyond. So what we've been finding is people want to build libraries together. Can we go and make tools and structures to be able to have content-based communities, people that have as part of their world these different books, music, video, whatever it is that defines them, be able to find a home, have the rules and regulations that make sense to them for going and putting things up, and have end users be able to search all of it and make sense of it. Wikipedia made text able to be a collaborative project to go and pull this whole thing off. WordPress made wonderful tools for lots of people to make websites, mostly blogs, but also other things. And they made it easy to go and make it so that you could make a website and do sets of blogs. Can we, and this is an open question, and it's a question for all of us, can we all build the tools to make it so that these communities that have books, music, video, rich, they made it metadata types, and can they go and put things in central places in such a way that they have enough owning and controlling and figuring that it's kind of theirs, but loose enough to make it so that it makes sense as a whole, that if you take the union of these collections, that you can then build something much, much more than just having a whole pile of websites with the different scans of different things. And that is our challenge. And we've dedicated the Internet Archive, and we're turning the Internet Archive over the last year to basically build this vision. And tonight, what you're going to see is the first demonstration of a bunch of these tools that are still in development, but to show kind of the direction of where it is we're going with all of this. So this is, I'd say it's an exciting turning point, a maturing, if you will, of the Internet Archive, and I think even of the open communities, to be able to build tools together that make it make sense for patrons, end users, kids, anybody, can find their way through and build their own libraries together. So that's the theme for the evening, and I'd like to hand it back off to Jason to bring on our first demonstration. Thank you.
Hey there, it's me again. So, you know, building libraries together, it takes place in many ways, right? It's often one book at a time, okay? But the next person I'm going to bring out, well, he's been working with a whole bunch of people over the last few years, and thanks to him, we have 2 million books scanned online. At this point, we have 50 miles of books, and we have 1,000, this is a real number, 1,000 new books scanned in a day at the Internet Archive, scanned in from 5 continents and 8 countries. Okay, and so the man who's responsible for that, who wants to show you some fun stuff, is Robert Miller, our Director of Books.
So ladies and gentlemen, friends of the archive and book lovers, I stand before you today in a tux. My wife looked at me this morning and said, game show host? I said, no, that's when I was on QVC. I actually was, but that's a different story. Guy outside when I walked in said, magician? I guess the closest thing I'd come to being a magician was I made $1,000 disappear by investing in pets.com in the year 2000. Brewster, I should have stuck with Alexis. Your tip was right. Alexa, rather, excuse me. So why a tux? On behalf of my team, and I represent many, today's a notable occasion. We want to add and welcome a new member into the Digital Archive family. Now, since 2005, we've been digitizing books for our community. And our community, as you're probably aware, is a community of book lovers. It's a community that believes in open knowledge, discovery, and learning. And probably more important, we share a common vision with Brewster of a digital library for the future. And so what we're going to talk about for a few minutes here is how we're going to get there. Since 2005, as Jason said, we've digitized over 2 million e-books. They've been downloaded over 20 million times every month. And the way we've done it is through our workhorse here. It's called a full-frame scribe. And for those in the back who can't see, I'm 5'8". This is 6 foot. This weighs in at a robust, healthy 350 pounds and delivers high-quality images. The problem is it takes 2 days to assemble if we ship it and 3 days to train someone how to do it. So many libraries came back to us and said, looks nice when you do it, and all I hear is it's your machinery, it's your software, and it's your labor. What about us? We said, the you in community. Okay, we have to go back and rethink the model here. So we worked hard, gave my team some challenges, and I'm really proud with what they came up. And when we talked to the libraries, I said there's 3 things that are important. We want something that's portable, we want something that's easy to use because we don't know who's going to be running it, and we want something that's ours. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce to you our newest family member and highlight before the applause a few differences. Six feet, 40 inches. 350 pounds, 62 pounds. Pretty trim. 2 days to assemble, 3 days to learn how to use, 10 minutes and no tools to put it together. And you can be scanning on it in 10 minutes, and many of you have scanned 5 pages downstairs. But I think the most important thing, as Brewster pointed out, is this gives us an opportunity to share with the community a tool to free up content that never could have made it to a digitization center, as Jason said, in 8 continents. including Mars, content that could not come because it was too fragile to travel, or more importantly, content that couldn't come to us because it had to be done by a librarian. So please join me in a warm welcome and introduce to our new family, into our family, the Tabletop Scribe.
All right. So, besides scanning books, right, we're also known for scanning a little bit of the web here and there with our petabytes of web data that we have. But we also scan the web professionally. And by that, I'm talking about our service, Archive-It. And yes, Archive-It is basically our professional interaction with places that want to have their websites archived. Been at it for about 9 years now, and we kind of own the market. 3 out of 4 American organizations that do this use the Archive-It system that we have here. We're kind of the thing. We're kind of the big deal in web archiving, I'm just saying. And so I want you to hear about the next piece of web scanning we're doing with the woman who was there at the beginning 9 years ago with Archive-It, Christine Hanna.
Thank you, Jason. I don't think I've ever been introduced by a fellow in a top hat before. So I'm so excited to be here tonight with all of you celebrating, and welcome to our home and our beautiful building. So tonight I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Archive-It. When we first started the Internet Archive, when Brewster founded it in 1996, we used automated crawlers, machines, to capture web content. And as the years went on, we realized what we really needed were people. We needed communities to capture what was truly important on the World Wide Web. Archivists, librarians, curators, subject matter experts, people with deep knowledge and passion and understanding of subjects and topics and domains. So, with a small team and a small group of believers and supporters, we launched Archive-It 1.0 in February 2006. And essentially, Archive-It allowed anybody to be a web archivist. It was a simple user, had a simple user interface, it was a web application, and it allowed somebody to create a collection and run a crawl. And we have a couple of examples here of some of our early adopters. University of Texas at Austin created a collection on Latin American government documents. North Carolina State Archives and State Library created collections on their elected officials, the senators and the governors who were creating websites and later being active on social media. Columbia University created a collection on human rights, a very, very universal theme. And our friends at Brigham Young University created a collection on Mormon mommy blogs. And also, I wanted to give a shout out to two Archive-It partners who are here tonight, who are also early adopters. James Jacobs, Stanford University. Yay. And Jeffrey Harder from University of Alberta. So thank you both for believing in the cause so early. Because early on, we were met with an incredible amount of resistance. There was a lot of skepticism about why should we be web archiving? A lot of organizations didn't believe that it should be part of their larger institutional collecting strategies. And really, I mean, who can blame them, right? Because back then, and still true today, is the quality of web content is all over the map. There's tremendous technical challenges inside institutions. There's policy challenges. There's workflow, best practices issues, selection criteria, metadata, resource allocation. And also, back then, who could really have predicted the amount of physical content that is now only available in digital form on the World Wide Web? But we persevered, And I like to think that we persevered together. I like to think that the Archivate community supported the Archivate service, and we in turn supported them. And we learned from each other, and we've really, really grown the service into something that's used by so many organizations, including internationally. We had our first international partner meeting last year, hosted by our colleagues at the University of Innsbruck in Austria. We also have seen art libraries and museums now start to use Archivate. The Frick, the Smithsonian, the Arab American National Museum, they're all prolific web archivists. They're using Archivate. They realized that it was as important to gather and collect this rich media that existed online as it was to preserve their paintings and their artifacts. And the Archivate service had a bit of a milestone on Monday morning at 2 a.m. to be exact, but who's counting? We launched the next generation of Archivate, the first phase of Archivate 5.0. Yes. We are so excited about the next generation of Archivate, and I'm so, so proud of the team who worked tirelessly around the clock to make this happen. And I'm so proud of all of the Archivate partners who participated in the development process, and we really hope that as they use 5.0, they'll see themselves in the service, they'll see the features they requested, they'll see the functionality that they suggested, and it will really serve their purposes. And with 5.0, as some of you may not know because you haven't seen the service, we have a shiny new user interface and a really, really robust reporting section, which is going to help our partners even have higher quality web archives. So in closing, I want to end on admittedly a dramatic example of why web archive, but I think it's a pretty important one to highlight, is we do a lot of spontaneous collections on events around the world. And this year in February, we started a collection on the events in Ukraine. And we were mainly collecting Western news sites and some political blogs. And then one Saturday morning in early March, and yes, folks, web archivists do get emergency phone calls on the weekends, and we got a call from one of our concerned colleagues that websites that were being hosted in Ukraine were at risk, and they asked us if we would preserve them. So, of course, our team went right to work on the weekend and captured the sites, and successfully they are now in a web archive here in California in our servers. And literally days after that web archive was complete, mass gunmen went into the buildings that were in question in the Ukraine and brought the servers down, and that content was at risk. And so we really... And so some of that content is back up, but that doesn't matter, right? Because what happens next, we know that that content is safe in our archive. So I think that's a really, really good example of web archiving. And I just wanted to end on there's no slide. So what the slide is, if you can visualize it, it's Rosie the Riveter saying, "We can save our libraries." And I wanted to end with that visual, with a quote, because all of this, the understanding of saving this the at-risk web content is not lost on the younger generation. We have a very robust K-12 web archiving program, and I wanted to read a quote from one of our 15-year-old student archivists from Virginia when he was asked about the value of web archiving. "A long time from now, thousands of years in the future, people will need to research about our generation. And as these people are looking back, without this project, there would be no record of us, and we'd just be dust in the wind." So thank you all for not allowing us to be dust in the wind. Thank you for being our partners, our colleagues, for crawling the web and building libraries together.
Hey, anyone here know about our TV news? Anyone here know that? The insane miracle that we've created for you? So basically, if you go to archive.org/TV and you type in a phrase, you can go see what news programs have mentioned anything you're searching for in the last couple of years, and it's updated every day. It's an omniscient eye of the news. Anyway, that's so last year. I've got Roger McDonald. He's going to talk about the TV news projects that he's working on now. So let's go for it. Let's give this guy a big hand. Is that what's going on? Yay! You want to stop there? You want to keep going? You want to roll the dice? You want to roll the dice, man? Let's go for it. All right, go for it.
Ah, I rolled the dice. Good evening. I'd like you all to imagine that it's 50 years ago tonight, and you're watching TV.
8, 9, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
Television. It's our most pervasive medium. An enormous amount of money is spent, an enormous amount of talent is spent selling products, selling politicians as products. Yet how much of television is spent informing people, giving them information that they really need to make important choices in their lives? At the Internet Archive here, that's a question we're trying to answer with others. That question and more. A couple years ago, in the context of the 2012 elections, we opened up an archive of all national US television news and local news from the San Francisco and Washington, D.C. metropolitan areas. Opened it up for search. Opened it up by using the closed captioning, repurposing it for search to allow people to find exact portions they were looking for, allowing people to compare, contrast, quote, and borrow television for the first time to reflect back on this wavefront that sweeps over us, but has no pause and rewind button on that experience in order to go, what the heck was that that just went by? What we've done, in some ways of looking at it, is provide everybody with the capability to be a bit of the Jon Stewart Show production team, to allow you to go, oh, wait a minute, what about that? And what about this? And to wrap that in your own commentary. The Jon Stewart Show research team, yes, but we offer you the opportunity to dig much deeper. And sometimes that digging is beyond the scale of a single human to do it. In those cases, we're starting to allow select experimenters to come in to our servers with their algorithms to study the entire corpus of our television news archive and try to learn to ask big questions of big data and make better sense of what the television is representing. So I'd like to give you a couple examples of some researchers who've done some interesting work. There's plenty more. At MIT and Harvard, a group took our television closed captioning and research service, took a look and to study the ebbs and flows of the Trayvon Martin story, how there was a battle for his legacy, how it twisted and turned throughout the media ecosystem. And using our service, for the first time, such a complete media ecosystem study was done in order to be able to find when things started to move, who was responsible for that pivot point, and how it worked. We think this is a great open door for a lot more reflection on how media interacts with each other, with itself, and our reactions to it. In our reactions to it, media often reflects deep emotions, sometimes, in way of looking at it, the media that we see, that we watch, that we hear, oftentimes reflects deep emotions that are part of our collective psyche. A Georgetown University researcher, Kalev Letteru, recently applied some really interesting research and opened up a service that anybody can do to look at emotional indices, over 2,000 individual emotional indices. And look, here we see the emotion anxiety represented over the last 4 years of television news. And in the case there where you see the big spikes in that duration, what was the happening during the news? What perfused the news with so much anxiety that the algorithms went, whoa, what's going on here? Well, interestingly enough, it was when Congress threatened and then fulfilled its threat to close down the federal government. The latest thing that we're doing is trying to help create a library with many others to study the interactions between media and money and politics. These are the lead collaborators, and we're working with many more, to study how money is influencing, within an election context, the programming as well as the advertising. We chose Philadelphia because in this market area, which stretches from northern Delaware to southern New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania, there's a bunch of highly competitive elections this year, elections that we anticipated a lot of money would be flowing, overt and so-called dark money. We've created a project and opened it up at the URL here, in which lots of people are looking at this entire collection of television news from Philadelphia, identifying political ads within the news, indexing each of those ads with information about who's the candidate, pro or con, who's behind that candidate, who's sponsoring that candidate and that advertising, how much they're paying for that ad, and who's behind it. We're working with the Sunlight Foundation and their exceptional data resources. So through our interface, you can explore those ads, look at individual ones, and then dive deeper to find out who's exactly paying for this. This region of Philadelphia, the fourth largest television market in the nation, has some 3 million households. This fall, those 3 million households have been absolutely inundated with political ads, tens of thousands of political ads. Our researchers have discovered 5,000 already just in the last 6 weeks within the Philadelphia market area. Those ads range from the friendly and homey, hey, I'm your friend, you should vote for me, to really some dark and disturbing ones. And I'd like to give you some little snippets of some of the ads to give you a range of that of which is being presented. And now we're having a technical difficulty.
I'm honored to approve this message.
Who's able to improve child care centers,
has increased state funding for education,
to help fund our schools for a change.
Join me to fight for great schools and good paying jobs.
Good paying jobs.
Nice. Help rebuild American manufacturing.
He hasn't done anything, so we can say whatever we want.
Up a creek without a paddle.
Her attacks were desperate and dishonest.
Man and Trevetti's extreme views would make it even worse.
Contributions from Philadelphia Union boss Joe Dougherty. Dougherty is the guy charged with racketeering, destroying property at two Delaware County schools, and burning down a church.
And burning down a church. So with all this heat, where's the light? Where's that light of information? Well, you won't find much of it in television news. Our researchers have recently identified a number of short 30-minute television programs in the Philadelphia area in which there's 12 and 13 of these ads in it in just those 30 minutes. And then in those same programs, absolutely no news about political issues in general, much less the political races that are going on. We're just beginning to learn about the interplay between media and money, between politics and advertising. We're just beginning to look at how those stations that represent, that get enormous amount of money to run these ads, how they are fulfilling or not fulfilling their obligation, their federally sanctioned obligation to have those licenses to broadcast, to fulfill what's called the critical information needs of their communities. So we're working with a number of scholars here this year in the region of Philadelphia, because we're looking forward to learn lessons this year that by 2016 we can be collaborating with people around the country to build a libraries together of television news, of the political ads, of the whole media ecosystem, and linking that with information about the money behind it, the influence behind it, and making it all referenceable, making it not just that experience, as I said before, that just washes over us, that which has, we have no pause and rewind button on that experience. Now we can stop it, we can quote it, we can call it out, we can analyze it, we can analyze it in big data formats. We're hoping that that will provide an environment within the next round of elections in which journalists are given tools to make better sense of what's going on and to convey that to the public. And we hope as a product of all this and all of us working together that we might make a modest step towards providing individual citizens with the information they need to make better choices. Better choices when they go to vote. Better choices that will determine some of the outcome of their lives and some of the outcome of our lives. Thank you.
Well, we thought the machines were going to save us. We thought the machines were going to do it all. We thought that if we just archived the World Wide Web and had our spiders go out there and crawl it all, that we would be done. And we weren't. Really, we needed people to help every step of the way. We thought we'd just go out there and just digitize all of the books and we'd be done. And it turns out that's not really the process either, that there are collections that really reflect the communities that have built them, that love them, that understand them, and they have to be brought and kept alive together in the digital world in the same way that they have come together in the physical world. The television, we thought all we have to do is just archive television from around the world. And we started in the year 2000. Rod Hewitt, who's here, worked for 12 years collecting 20 channels, Russian, Chinese, Japanese, Iraqi, Al Jazeera, BBC, CNN, 24 hours a day. We thought we had it. But it turns out that's not it. That you actually need people to go and find bits and pieces, put in new context, put in new user interfaces so that you can actually understand your world in new and different ways. And I would say that music has been the same basic issue all along, and it's actually been one where we've had some learning of this all along. So in the area of music, we started with music with actually a suggestion from John Eisen, who was an intern at that point building a website for the Internet Archive, and he said, you know, Brewster, you talk about all this storage and stuff, but you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to make that available? And there's this taper community that goes and records concerts and trades them. And I said, well, I remember that. I had my cassette tapes for the Grateful Dead with all the little notes as exactly where did the cassette tape. He said, that's been going on now even in the digital world, but they've got a problem. They don't believe in compression because they know about the generation loss problems. So their files are huge. And they go and put it up on a university server for a while. They broadcast it out to the email list, etree.org, and say, hey, this Dead show is up, or this other band's concert is up. And lots of people will just descend on it, try to get it, until the university sysadmin say, stop. And they shut it down, and it all go down. And they basically would just have these little pockets. There was a distributed archiving infrastructure, yet there was no way to go and store and make it access. I said, okay, why don't you write an email note to this community and offer them unlimited storage, unlimited bandwidth forever for free? So he did, typed this way, sent it off. Email came back from the etree.org and said, we don't believe you. It's too big. But if you could do it, it would be our dream. So it's always a good sign when somebody says it'll be your dream. So he said, try us. Let's work together. Let's see if we can make this happen. And it's different to go and tape trade than it is to go and have it on a hosted website. So let's get some level of permission from the bands. It could be the drummer. You know, it could be kind of anybody. But why don't we get somebody to say it's okay from each of these communities to go and put these things up? And we started getting bands. Actually, they started getting bands sending us emails saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And then once that was on our website, then groups started to go all over the country and all over the world going and posting that band's concerts. Cool. It was going at 1, 2, then 3 bands a day. We were starting to get 5, 10, 15, and we were sort of stabilized at about 40 to 50 concerts per day. And actually, at this point, we have now over 6,000 bands and 130,000 concerts up on the net. And this is a very particular, picky crowd. And it basically showed us, and it actually drove our webmasters nuts to try to deal with them, to build the tools to make it so that they could go and do their own thing. And it turns out that the Grateful Dead community is nuts in completely different ways, and they had their own rules, and now we have 9,000 concert recordings of the Grateful Dead up, and it may be one of the more famous things that we're famous for, the Wayback Machine and having everything the Grateful Dead has ever done. But it showed us how to basically try to support communities. And there's more of them. There was a community called the Internet Underground Music Archive. It came before MP3 was standardized. So these were an AIFF, if you remember the bad old days of audio formats. And they put these things up and they shared them on the internet in the early 1990s. And then they went through a set of acquisitions and went bloop, as basically all corporations do. But some fans went and archived it and gave it to us in the last year. And we went and put it up. And now we have 43,000 albums from that community up once again. And it's actually quite popular again. So it's like, yay, this is working. Another example we had were net labels. As labels were starting to go out of business, a lot of the little ones just couldn't make it go. They just couldn't make the any form of business model work. But they loved curating materials. And they just needed a place to host it. And Simon Carlos came up with this and coined this term net labels when he worked at the Internet Archive, and he just said, why don't we go and help them? So they basically go and put things up, and they can put up new labels, the new collections, and often they have their own websites, and they deep link into the Internet Archive's collections in such a way that they make it all come about. And now there are 2,000 net labels and 54,000 albums on those labels up and thriving on the Internet, which is cool. So we're making some progress in the idea of supporting communities in the music world, kind of despite ourselves, actually. So we thought, why don't we take it seriously and see if we can not only gear just music, but all of the Internet Archive, and that's actually been some of the inspiration of the change that you're seeing in us tonight. But we wanted to go for the recorded sound collections of CDs, LPs, 78s, and web-era distribution of paid materials. And how do we do that without ending up, well, in trouble or making people mad? How can we do it respectfully in such a way that it supports musicians and people that are still trying to make money out of making the whole music world work? And we're really launching tonight with a few initial partners and looking for more partners in each of these category areas. One is labels that are actively serving and offering for pay CDs or the like we want them to work with us. And we reached out to some of our friends and said, what if we went and archived your materials respectfully, and you get to help figure out how we can make it available. And I'd like to do a call out for Musica Omnia and Other Minds that are a couple here in the audience. There's David Fox, and Andrew is here, that are part of these communities that have basically said, yes, here are our CDs, let's digitize these, and let's figure out how far we can go in such a way that it's a good balance between the commercial constraints of real labels with the interests of what you can do if you have it all in one place. Another fantastic partnership I'm really happy to announce tonight is with the Archive of Contemporary Music in New York City. This is run by a complete wacko named Bob George, who happens to be in the audience. And 29 years ago, he started going and collecting important hip-hop and New York City collection discs, and couldn't find a library that would go and run with it after... He said, I'm kind of done with this. And nobody would take them. And so Bob George said, okay, there's room for an archive, and made the Archive of Contemporary Music. And it's got a couple million LPs and about 350,000 or 500,000 CDs. It is a fantastic collection. And we're now working with him to go and help digitize the CDs in his collection and eventually the LPs to be able to go and explore how we can bring these collections, at least preservation, at least some level of research and scholarship, and who knows, maybe there's some new services that would be the kind of Shazam or Pandora of the next generation because you could go and bring these together. And then thank you very much, Bob George. Please stand up and say... So another is we're starting to get collections donated. The KUSF LP collection was donated, and Bob George arranged for us to get an unbelievable 78 RPM record collection from the Otavia Public Library. And this just arrived, the second allotment of it, and it is an absolutely huge collection of these materials that a lot of libraries are just not knowing what to do with. They wanted them accessible in some way or another, but people are just not picking up a lot of 78s and putting them on turntables, or LPs, and in fact, even CDs. I'm starting to feel pretty old these days when they're not even CD players in cars or in laptops. So that's even that technology is kind of on its way out. But how are we going to then bring this at least into digital form to preserve it? It's not going to be done, I think, by a big company coming along that says, oh, we're just going to own all of this. Well, actually, maybe that'll happen, but then they'll drop the ball. I think it's going to be done in a distributed system with fanatics, with people that really care about these. And if we can make tools that can make it so that people that are really into jazz or really into this hip-hop or really into these Congolese drummers, if there can be different communities that come together to build their own worlds that are within themselves, give them the recognition and importance and the metadata and the curation and the reason and all of that, but is also still makes sense to end users that just might want to surf around and now see what it is they're singing in Angola or what's going on in Cuba in 1940s jazz, that we can make that easy. And we're making tools now to be able to digitize CDs and LPs and in such a way that lots of people can be able to do this. They're not quite ready for full distribution, but we've got now a volunteer set here in the Internet Archive that are awesome, that are the volunteers here. Well, yay, woo! Thank you very much. And at the Archive of Contemporary Music, they're also going and digitizing. But we want this to basically be a global project to go and build these together. And one of the motivations, we've got a couple of things that we'd like to do with this collection right off the bat, and we're already just starting, is one is give access to computer science researchers that are trying to get access to these to be able to do these interesting new services. Daniel Ellis is one of the 300 world computer science ethnomusicologists that are going and studying music using computers. And he says that the key thing that's slowing down the research and innovation in his area is access to a critical mass, a comprehensive collection, a comprehensive archive of commercial music. And I'm happy to say that we're now running Daniel Ellis's code, starting along on all of the net labels, and we'll rip through all the rest of it to go and do this audio fingerprinting across millions, 10 million more tracks out in the Internet Archive. So thank you, Daniel Ellis, and we're getting there. There's another university, one in Barcelona, UPF, that has built technology for not only fingerprinting, but also for finding rhythmic structures, so you can tell mambas from tangos, which is pretty freaking cool, chord structures, if they're women or male men singing, and doing that sort of analysis, beats per minute, to be able to go and make it so that we can surf through these materials in new and different ways. And we've just started going and running their low-level analysis on our collections, which I think is a really good start for doing, in the open, things that can help us understand and explore our musical heritage much better. And we've got a listening room. So at least, if you've got the physical stuff, the idea of having a listening room that if you slog your bones into the Internet Archive, snap on some headphones, that you can have access to the whole collection. Over 10 million songs are available on those little iPads that you've probably seen the little area down there. And the idea is to try to make it so that this is available to all. So we've got these couple of approaches. We'd like to make a metadata-rich website next and trying to bring some level of access to this. But first, we've got to work together to go and build our music libraries together. So please help. But one more thing. How are we going to weave this together? The Internet Archive has concentrated mostly on just trying to collect and protect the collections. And if you've used our website, it kind of looks like it's a 10-year-old website, because it's a 10-year-old website. About a year ago, we said, let's go and work really hard to try to figure out how to make a new website that's not only really terrific to use on today's devices, but can be a platform for us to supporting the communities coming together to build their own presences. We're now at a point where we are at a stepping stone, where we've basically repeated and replaced the functionality of the existing website with a modern website. And I'd like to show that to you for the first time tonight. And we invite you to use it. It doesn't have the next steps, which we're going to have to work together with you all on, to make it so that you can customize different parts of it in more fluid fashion. But it's already so freaking cool, I want to show it to you. Okay. So, it's under construction. And if you remember those little under construction signs, well, let's see if I can. Open. Where's Star Trek when you need it? Okay, I'm going to do it again. And it's going to work this time. Here. How under construction is it? It's really under construction. These are the under construction banners that were saved from the GeoCities websites by archive team. They're awesome. They keep going. They keep getting better. There was a lot of construction going on in the early 1990s. Okay, it keeps going, but it's still really worthwhile. There's some awesome animated GIFs. We just need more animated GIFs out there, I think. Oh, yeah. Pretty girls with under construction signs, Homer Simpson. Anyway, we're under construction. Do you get it? Okay, so here we go. You go to archive.org. And you hit V2, and you get a nice, bright, shiny, new website, a little slowly, that is able to bring together and make surfable the 12 million objects that we have. Here's the Wayback Machine that you're familiar with, and then there's the rest of the Internet Archive, and a cool, faceted search system to be able to make more sense of it. And yeah, okay. So we even have a little responsiveness going on. Okay, all right. So it's sort of assumed, but it certainly isn't there with our existing website. And if you want to search on something, I'm going to go for Occupy Wall Street. Well, this was a community project to go and archive a lot of materials around the whole Occupy. And we have much more graphically oriented website now. I've got the infinite scroll kind of thing going on that makes it just more, a lot more fun to play around. And if you say, oh, okay, well, that's kind of interesting, but I'd really just like to see the movies. And you click on the movies, filters just for the movies, click on something, play it. An awesome guy.
Your name?
My name is Kazembe Balagoon. I'm the program and outreach coordinator of the Breck Forum. The reason I'm here today and the reason I've been here the past couple of weeks is because Occupy Wall Street.
So, the idea is to make it much more fun and interactive to be able to find your way through these collections. You can favorite things, you can share them, and the like. And one of the big things that's different is you are suddenly starting to be present in this website. So the idea of having user pages that have their favorites, these are my favorites that I've been collecting over the years, but basically never been able to find very well, and are now on my page that I can now go and share with others. So these are the collections that I've built over time. It, all in all, makes it a lot more fun. Okay, this is a cool one from SIGGRAPH from 2001, and it's just... And I never get tired of it. So the idea of I'll just let this play for a while. So the idea of this website is to make it fun and frolicky, to not only surf and find materials within it, but to also make it a possible so that for we can start to go and add things into the Internet Archive and create collections and full-on libraries within a common set of tools and structures that allow people to find their way through it and still keeps the integrity and the importance of individual collections. So with So that is our evening tonight. I want to thank you very much. And I'd like to bring back on Jason Scott.
I have the easiest job in the world. I got to follow that. Do you know how hard it is not to, like, go running in the streets about the new interface? Amazing work. That has been something, okay? You've been a great audience tonight to listen through all of our different awesome things we've been working on. We've been having so much fun planning this thing. And we've had such an enjoyable night tonight. And I just want to let you know that, you know, you've been a great audience. But more than just being an audience, I want to put this thing back up again. More than being an audience, none of this matters without you, right? I mean, a book that isn't being read is just a big pile of paper, and a computer server that isn't being used is just a real big time and bandwidth suck, right? I mean, we need you. And that's why the theme is building libraries together, okay? We're going to need you to work with this, you to try out our collections, you to listen to our music, and yes, you to financially support. So, you know, it's archive.org/donate. We are going to have a fundraising run at the end of the year. We take subscriptions by credit card now. We even take Bitcoin. So we're going to be sending out a message to you guys. Don't just drag it to the trash. Open it. Read a little bit about what we're up to, and I hope that you guys consider spreading the word. You know, one of the perceptions that people have, because I do a lot of traveling out there, is that in some way, you know, we kind of have the same problem NPR does. People think that we're a government organization. You'd think, but no, they actually think that we're just raking in tax dollars and keeping this thing going, that the largest corpus of old websites is being funded by the government. It's not. It's not. It's this guy and you and everyone else we can convince to give money towards this amazing tax-deductible event. Because if you open your hearts and you open your wallets, we will work to keep all of this data up forever for free. Okay? So, some quick housekeeping. Like I said, the evening is not over. There are still desserts and drinks downstairs. We're still going to have all of the scanning and the arcade and everything else open for you to try them out, learn about all the awesome things that we're working on. And if you get 5 check-ins on your library card, you will get a prize. All right. Screw stands. I'm not about stands anymore. Hi, everybody. So listen, okay? This thing was done by a lot of people, and I think I'd like to really credit them. So can the Internet Archive speakers stand up? And these people, plus myself, are a tiny little piece of all the incredible work the Internet Archive staff have done. So can the staff also stand up? All these people who did all this amazing work. Yeah. Yeah, I know your long late nights. I know all the work you did. The tears, the happiness. Okay? And these people were guided with volunteers. So can the volunteers who also helped us also stand up? All right. All right. If any of you ever uploaded something to the archive, can you also stand up? Yeah. You made us bigger. Has anybody else downloaded from the archive? You also should stand up. And finally, are there any internet, could the Internet Archive members stand up? No, it's a trick question. You are all members of Internet Archive. Everybody stand up. Everybody have a good night. Everybody enjoy what we're up to. Thank you for coming out for our celebration. It is currently 10-0. Royals are winning. And thank you so much for your time.